Chapter 15. I had bad dreams. They were the usual fare. Flames devoured someone who screamed my name. A pretty girl spread her arms, eyes closed, and fell slowly backward as dozens of fine cuts opened all over her skin. The air became a fine pink spray. I turned from it into a kiss with Susan, who drew me down and tore out my throat with her teeth. A woman who seemed familiar, but whom I did not recognize, shook her head and drew her hand from left to right. The dream scenery faded to black in the wake of her motion. She turned to me, dark eyes intent, and said, "You need to rest." Mickey Mouse woke me up, my alarm jangling noisily, his little hand on 2 and the big hand on 12. I wanted to smack the clock for waking me up, but I reined in the impulse. I'm not against a little creative violence now and then, but you have to draw the line somewhere. I wouldn't sleep in the same room with a person who would smack Mickey Mouse. I got up, got dressed, left a message for Murphy, another for Michael, fed Mister, and hit the road. Michael's house did not blend in with most of the other homes in his neighborhood west of Wrigley Field. It had a white picket fence. It had elegant window dressings. It had a tidy front lawn that was always green, even in the midst of a blazing Chicago summer. It had a few shady trees, a lot of well-kept shrubberies, and if I had found a couple of deer grazing on the lawn or drinking from the bird bath, it wouldn't have surprised me. I got out of the Beetle, holding my blasting rod loosely in my right hand. I opened the gate, and a few jingle bells hanging on a string tinkled happily. The gate swung shut on a lazy spring behind me. I knocked on the front door and waited, but no one answered. I frowned. Michael's house had never been empty before. Charity had at least a couple of kids who weren't old enough to be in school yet, including the poor little guy they'd named after me, Harry Carpenter. How cruel is that? I frowned at the cloud-hazed sun. Weren't the older kids getting out of school shortly? Charity had some kind of maternal obsession with never allowing her kids to come home to an empty house. Someone should have been there. I got a sick, twisty feeling in the pit of my stomach. I knocked again, put my ear against the door, and listened. I could hear the slow tick of the old grandfather clock in the front room. The heater cycled on for a moment, and the vents inside whispered. There were a few sounds when a bit of breeze touched the house, the creaks of old and comfortable wood. Nothing else. I tried the front door. It was locked. I stepped back off the porch and followed the narrow driveway to the back of the property. If the front of the carpenter's home would have qualified for Better Homes and Gardens, the back would have been fit for a Craftsman commercial. The large tree centered on the back lawn cast lots of shade in the summer, but with the leaves gone, I could see the fortress-like tree house Michael had built for his kids in it. It had finished walls, an actual window, and guardrails anywhere anyone could possibly have thought about falling. The tree house had a porch that overlooked the yard. Hell, I didn't have a porch. It's an unfair world. A big section of the yard had been bitten off by an addition connected to the back of the house. The foundation had been laid, and there were wooden beams framing what would eventually be walls. Heavy contractor's plastic had been stapled to the wooden studs to keep the wind off the addition. The separate garage was closed, and a peek in the window showed me that it was pretty well filled with lumber and other construction materials. "No cars," I muttered. "Maybe they went to McDonald's or a church. Do they have church at 3 in the afternoon? I turned around to go back to the Beetle. I'd leave Michael a note. My stomach fluttered. If I didn't get a second for the duel, it was likely to be a bad evening. Maybe I should ask Bob to be my second, or maybe Mister. No one dares to mess with Mister. Something rattled against the metal gutters running the length of the back of the house. I jumped like a spooked horse and scrambled away from the house toward the garage at the back of the yard so I could get a look at the roof. Given that in the past day or so, no less than 3 different parties had taken a poke at me, I felt totally justified in being on edge. I got to the back of the yard but couldn't see the whole roof from there, so I clambered up into the branches, then took a 6-foot ladder up to the main platform of the treehouse. From there, I could see that the roof was empty. I heard brisk, somewhat heavy footsteps below me and beyond the fence at the back of the little yard. I froze in place in the treehouse, listening. The heavy footsteps padded up to the fence at the back of the yard, and I heard the scrape of chain link dragging against dry leaves and other late winter detritus. I heard a muted grunt of effort and a long exhalation. Then the footsteps came to the base of the tree. Leather scraped against a wooden step, and the tree shivered almost imperceptibly. Someone was climbing up. I looked around me, but the ladder was the only way down, unless I felt like jumping. It couldn't have been more than 9 or 10 feet down. Odds were I could land more or less in one piece, but if I misjudged the jump, I could sprain an ankle or break a leg, which would make running away both impractical and embarrassing. Jumping would have to be a last resort. I gathered in my will and settled my grip on my blasting rod, pointing it directly at where the ladder met the platform. The tip of the blasting rod glowed with a pinpoint of bright red energy. Blonde hair and the top half of a girl's angelic young face appeared at the top of the ladder. There was a quiet gasp, and her blue eyes widened. "Holy crap!" I jerked the tip of the blasting rod up and away from the girl, releasing the gathered energy. "Molly?"